thoughts, recalling his movements, analyzing his bizarre situation, planning the day ahead, trying to forget his past while trying to predict what might happen in the next 12 hours. Sleep was fitful at best. He had dozed for a few hours, it felt like 4 or 5, but he couldn't be sure because his rather warm little room was completely dark. He removed the earphones. As usual, he had fallen asleep sometime after midnight, with happy Italian dialogue ringing in his ears. He was thankful for the heat. They had frozen him at Rudley, and his last hotel stop had been just as cold. The new apartment had thick walls and windows and a heating system that worked overtime. When he decided the day was properly organized, he slowly placed his feet on the very warm tile floor and again thanked Luigi for the change of residence. How long he might stay here was uncertain, like most of the future they had planned for him. He switched on the light and checked his watch. Almost 5. In the bathroom, he switched on another light and studied himself in the mirror. The growth under his nose and along the sides of his mouth and covering his chin was coming in quite a bit grayer than he had hoped. In fact, after a week of cultivation, it was now obvious that his goatee would be at least 90% gray, with just a few lonely specks of dark brown thrown in. What the hell? He was 52 years old. It was part of the disguise and looked quite distinctive. With the thin face, hollow cheeks, short haircut, and little funky rectangular designer eyeglass frames, he could easily pass for Marco Lazzari on any street in Bologna, or Milan, or Florence, or all the other places he wanted to visit. An hour later, he stepped outside under the cold, silent porticos built by laborers who had been dead for 300 years. The wind was sharp and biting, and once again he reminded himself to complain to his handler about the lack of proper winter clothing. Marco didn't read papers and didn't watch television, and thus had no idea about weather forecasts. But it was certainly getting colder. He hustled along under the low porticos of Via Fondazza, headed toward the university, the only person moving about. He refused to use the map tucked away in his pocket. If he got lost, he might pull it out and concede a momentary defeat, but he was determined to learn the city by walking and observing. 30 minutes later, with the sun finally showing some life, he emerged onto Via Irnerio on the northern edge of the university section. 2 blocks east, and he saw the pale green sign for Bar Fontana. Through the front window, he saw a shock of gray hair. Rudolph was already there. Out of habit, Marco waited for a moment. He glanced down Via Irnerio, from the direction he had just come, waiting for someone to sneak out of the shadows like a silent bloodhound. When no one appeared, he went inside.
"My friend Marco," Rudolph said with a smile as they exchanged greetings. "Please sit."
The cafe was half full, with the same academic types buried in their morning papers, lost in their own worlds. Marco ordered a cappuccino, while Rudolph refilled his meerschaum pipe. A pleasant aroma engulfed their little corner of the place.
"Got your note the other day," Rudolph was saying as he shot a cloud of pipe smoke across the table. "Sorry I missed you. So where have you been?"
Marco had been nowhere, but as the laid-back Canadian tourist with Italian roots, he had put together a mock itinerary. "A few days in Florence," he said.
"Ah, what a beautiful city."
They talked about Florence for a while, with Marco rambling on about the sights and art and history of a place he knew only from a cheap guidebook Ermanno had loaned him. It was in Italian, of course, which meant he had labored hours with a dictionary, translating it into something he could kick back and forth with Rudolph as if he'd spent weeks there. The tables grew crowded and the latecomers packed around the bar. Luigi had explained to him early on that in Europe, when you get a table, it's yours for the day. No one is rushed out the door so someone can be seated. A cup of coffee, a newspaper, something to smoke, and it doesn't matter how long you hold a table while others come and go. They ordered another round and Rudolph repacked his pipe. For the first time, Marco noticed tobacco stains on the wild whiskers closest to his mouth. On the table were 3 morning newspapers, all Italian. "Is there a good English newspaper here in Bologna?" Marco asked.
"Why do you ask?" Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I'd like to know what's happening across the ocean.
I'll pick up the Herald Tribune occasionally. It makes me so happy that I live here, away from all the crime and traffic and pollution and politicians and scandals. U.S. society is so rotten, and the government is the height of hypocrisy. The world's brightest democracy? Ha! Congress is bought and paid for by the rich.
When he looked as though he wanted to spit, Rudolph suddenly sucked on his pipe and began grinding away on the stem. Marco held his breath, waiting for another venomous assault on the United States. A moment passed. They both sipped coffee.
I hate the U.S. government, Rudolph grumbled bitterly.
Attaboy, thought Marco. What about the Canadian? He asked.
I give you higher marks. Slightly higher.
Marco pretended to be relieved and decided to change the subject. He said he was thinking of going to Venice next. Of course, Rudolph had been there many times and had lots of advice. Marco actually took notes as if he couldn't wait to hop a train. And then there was Milano, though Rudolph wasn't too keen on it because of all the right-wing fascists lurking there.
It was Mussolini's center of power, you know, he said, leaning in low, as if the other communists in Barfontana might erupt in violence at the very mention of the little dictator's name.
When it became apparent that Rudolph was willing to sit and talk through most of the morning, Marco began his exit. They agreed to meet at the same place, same time, the following Monday. A light snow had begun, enough to leave tracks for the delivery vans on Via Irnerio. As Marco left the warm café behind, he once again marveled at the foresight of Bologna's ancient city planners, who designed some 20 miles of covered sidewalks in the old town. He went a few blocks farther east and turned south on Via dell'Indipendenza, a wide, elegant avenue built in the 1870s so the higher classes who lived in the center would have an easy walk to the train station north of town. When he crossed Via Marsala, he stepped in a pile of shoveled snow and flinched as the frozen mush soaked his right foot. He cursed Luigi for his inadequate wardrobe. If it was going to snow, then common sense would dictate that a person needed some boots. This led to a lengthy internal tirade about the lack of funding Marco felt he was receiving from whoever in hell was in charge of his current cover. They'd dumped him in Bologna, Italy, and they were obviously spending a fair amount on language lessons and safe houses and personnel and certainly food to keep him alive. In his opinion, they were wasting valuable time and money. The better plan would be to sneak him into London or Sydney, where there were lots of Americans and everyone spoke English. He could blend in much easier. The man himself strode alongside him. "Buongiorno," Luigi said. Marco stopped, smiled, offered a handshake, and said, "Well, buongiorno, Luigi. Are you following me again?" "No, I was out for a walk. Saw you pass on the other side of the street. I love the snow, Marco. How about you?" They were walking again at a leisurely pace. Marco wanted to believe his friend, but he doubted if their meeting was an accident. "It's okay. It's much prettier here in Bologna than in Washington, D.C. during rush hour traffic. What exactly do you do all day long, Luigi? Mind if I ask?"
"Not at all. You can ask all you want."
"That's what I figured. Look, I have two complaints. Actually, three."
"No surprise. Have you had coffee?"
"Yes, but I'll take some more." Luigi nodded to a small corner cafe just ahead. They stepped inside and found all the tables taken, so they stood along the crowded bar and sipped espresso.
"What's the first complaint?" Luigi said in a low voice.
Marco moved closer. They were practically nose to nose. "The first two complaints are closely related. First, it's the money. I don't want a lot, but I would like to have some sort of stipend. No one likes to be broke, Luigi. I'd feel better if I had a little cash in my pocket and knew I didn't have to hoard it."
"How much?"
"Oh, I don't know. I haven't negotiated an allowance in a long time. What about 100 euros a week for starters? That way I can buy newspapers, books, magazines, food, you know, just the basics. Uncle Sam's paying my rent, and I'm very grateful. Come to think of it, he's been paying my rent for the past 6 years. You could still be in prison, you know." "Oh, thank you, Luigi. I hadn't thought of that. I'm sorry.